Welcome to the Attraction Pros Podcast, where professionals in the attractions business can get insight, tips, tools, and even a bit of inspiration. Your hosts are two people familiar with the twists and turns and ups and downs of this great industry. Josh Lieben is the Director of Business Development for Amusement Advantage, and Matt Heller is the founder of Performance Optimist Consulting.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Attraction Pros Podcast. My name is Joshua Lieben. Matt Heller, how are you doing today?
Excellent. How about yourself?
I'm doing great. We have no guest on today's show.
Why is that?
I don't know. What do you want to talk about?
Well, since this will probably be the first podcast that people listen to, they might want to know, like, who the heck we are.
Sure.
So who are you?
Who am I? That's a good question. I'm trying to find that out every day. So I am the Director of Business Development for a company called Amusement Advantage, which does guest experience solutions for the attractions industry. Been in business over 21 years since 1996, doing mystery shopping for over 500 attractions across the U.S. and Canada, anywhere from theme parks, amusement parks, water parks, zoos, museums, aquariums, family entertainment centers, bowling centers, skating centers, trampoline parks. If it's fun, we'll mystery shop it.
That's the main rule. That. Did you just make that up?
It has to be fun. No, I've used it once or twice, but yeah, I think I'm going to build that one into the
Flow. Cool.
If it's fun, we'll do it. If it's not fun, we're not interested.
There you go.
And Amusement Advantage brought me on a couple of years ago. I was putting together a number of guest experience, more so consulting programs for the attractions industry, and they aligned very well with the existing mystery shop programs. So I put together a number of training programs that I offer to attractions, as well as feedback analysis, looking at TripAdvisor and Yelp and matching them up against competitors and showing them their biggest areas of strength and opportunities for improvement, and helping them resolve from service failures and complaints. That's one of my big expertise that I've taken from the industry, from my experience. And so far, it's been good. It's been fun the way it's going. And because if it wasn't fun, I wouldn't be interested, like I said.
That's right. And if we're not having fun, there's something wrong.
Right. Exactly. So that's where I'm at. Who are you?
Who am I? Well, I'm this guy behind the microphone. I run a company called Performance Optimist Consulting. Been in business for myself since about 2011. Before that, I was working in amusement parks and theme parks kind of around the United States, and really fell in love with the industry, fell in love with the opportunity to help people. And since starting my own business, I've really fallen into kind of the HR consulting world. So I do a lot of leadership consulting and training, and I will, you know, go into a facility and, you know, sometimes do sort of a guest service analysis, but also tie that back to leadership and figure out how their leaders are affecting the things that you're ultimately measuring in the, you know, the social media and that kind of thing. And I do a lot of training classes and coaching, and really, my tagline, since you talked about, you know, being fun and everything, mine's all about helping leaders lead. So I truly believe that in this industry, that leaders play such an important role in the success of themselves, the individuals, their teams, the company, the industry, that, you know, for all of us to be sort of on the same page from a leadership standpoint, I think we can all provide just a great experience to our guests. So that's kind of who I am.
So I think it's great what you do as far as helping leaders lead. And it's funny when I think about, you know, my experience in the industry. And I think when you and I met, I was either in like a line level leadership role, or maybe I was even still a frontline employee. And I do remember thinking kind of as I moved up into leadership and management of just, wow, you know, leaders don't always necessarily know what to do in every single circumstance at all times of the day. That leaders aren't necessarily born, but are made and can be made and should be made and developed to be continually better. So
absolutely, you know, and if I could just real quick, the people who do say that they know what to do in every single situation are faking it. They don't. Nobody does. And I think you'll find people that, you know, they're harder to talk to or they're harder to approach because they sort of have this know-it-all air about them. And really, nobody knows it all. I've had the very fortunate experience to work with some of the, you know, people that are in leadership roles, top leaders in this industry. And each one of them says, you know, if you're not listening to people, if you don't surround yourself with really smart people, then you're not going to be a successful leader. So, you know, yeah, I mean, we all need help at some point.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. What did they say? You are the average of the five people you associate yourself most with.
Yeah, absolutely.
You heard that?
I have. So
it's,
yes.
Yeah. So it's who are you listening to? Who are you seeking help from? Who are you surrounding yourself with?
Well, and I think whose thought processes are you trying to tap into? You know, because if you talk to the same people all the time, you're going to hear the same things all the time. Then, you know, I saw something the other day on Facebook, and, you know, obviously there's a lot of things going on right now politically and things with, you know, the hurricane in Houston and what a terrible situation that is. And, you know, that's brought a lot of great things happening. People, you know, even people from Florida taking their airboats to Houston to help them out and help rescue people, which is fantastic. You know, but then it brings out people that are just... they just want to hear themselves talk. And I heard this term the other day that I kind of heard before, but it was more resonant than ever before. And it was the echo chamber. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're just talking either to hear yourself talk, or if you're talking to people who always have the same thought process as you, then you're never going to progress. And you're always going to be stuck in your same mindset.
Yeah, you're always going to have the same thought process, and in your head, it's always going to be correct.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Right, and then, and then, you know, it's weird because it completely validates your point, even if it's terrible. You know, it completely validates your point, and it probably makes you feel even more strongly about it. So
right.
If you feel one way, if you say the world is flat, and then all these other people say, yes, the world is flat, then... now you think, yes, it's got to be flat. So you're defending that position with even more fervor than you would have in the past.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And it just kind of snowballs.
Yeah.
In a direction you don't want it to. Well, or that you don't know you don't want it.
Right. Yeah,
then we as society.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Yeah. So speaking of social media and all the stuff that you do in there, I told you that I had a question for you, or a topic that I wanted to bring up, and I wanted to kind of get your thoughts on it. And I didn't tell you what it was. So if anybody's listening, I did not tell him what it was.
I have no idea. I have not seen the deck of cards, excuse me.
No, not at all.
yeah.
It actually has to do with Instagram. Because I know you're on there. And a friend of mine who is on Instagram but no other social platforms, you know, invited me to follow him or whatever it is that you do. And I have an Instagram account that I've had for a long time, and people keep following me and I never do anything on it. So I finally, because, you know, this person said, this is the only way you can keep up with me, I said, well, all right, I'm going to investigate this a little further. And so my question for you is, what is special or different about Instagram that people want to go there? And what have you found to be, for you, the best way to use it? To communicate and to interact with people?
Sure. So the first part of the question is what is it? Why are people using it? Is that,
yeah,
is that
kinda,
right?
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
Go ahead. I was going to say what differentiates it is that, you know, you're telling a story via photo instead of text, which is, you know, what the other platforms are for, or via video, via some sort of visual imagery. You can't just post a thought on Instagram, although technically you could if you just converted it to an image, and I've been seeing that more and more these days, and it's like, well, that kind of defeats the purpose. the reason I use it, you know, it's a little fuzzy right now as to why I use it and what I specifically use it for, and I don't know if you follow me or not.
I do.
Okay. So if you go deep into my Instagram page towards the beginning, I started it about 5 years ago. The ones towards the beginning are just all pictures of my laptop.
How exciting.
And, so what was exciting was I had just started, consulting, and I was consulting for luxury hotels and resorts. So I was always somewhere. And this is before, I don't know if it was before Facebook bought Instagram or before it was easily linked to it or before, it was definitely before it showed you like, oh, suggested people to follow, or if maybe you posted an image to Facebook, maybe that was the only way people were able to find your Instagram account. But I wasn't actively going through and following people or hoping that people would follow me. I just knew that I wanted to do something that I was able to kind of I just did it for myself is what it was. Because at this point now I was traveling a lot, but I didn't want to be that person who posted on social media every single day about something kind of obnoxious and cocky. Even though I was in a position where maybe I just checked out of a Ritz-Carlton and now I'm checking into a Waldorf Astoria. And the work itself was not easy whatsoever. I was, you know, the reason why my laptop is in it is because it's okay, this is my work environment. I'm still working, you know, 10, 12, sometimes even 14, 16 hours a day. I was like, but I just want something for myself to remind myself going forward that I'm not enjoying all of this while I'm here, but maybe I can enjoy it later when I look back and even remind myself while it's working. So when I first started my Instagram account, it was with my name, just because I didn't have anything else. And I didn't know what I was doing. And I literally downloaded it. And I had a buddy of mine in the front seat of my car, and he was eating a sandwich. And so I said, hey, smile. And that's my first post on Instagram is a picture of a friend of mine eating a sandwich. There's nothing.
Okay.
It's less exciting than a laptop, right?
Depends on the sandwich, I think.
Right. Yeah, that's true. It was a sandwich like from Walmart, like pre-made. Oh. Like there was nothing special about it.
Okay. Yeah. Your laptop's more exciting than a Walmart sandwich.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And I was like, oh, I can change a filter. Oh, I can change the brightness on it. So you'll see that, you know, that's what I wanted. I was like, oh, I've got this little photo editing software here. But then when I started kind of reminding myself of where I was, when I was you know, just constantly traveling all over the place, I actually changed the name of the account from my name to Remote Office. I don't know if you noticed that when you followed me, but my name on Instagram is Remote Office. I think there's an underscore in the middle. But I still, you know, I wasn't trying to get people to follow me. I wasn't trying to brag about anything. It was really just for myself. And then I realized I started getting more followers, mostly from people that I knew. I think, you know, for the first few years or so, I think I was following maybe like six people, something like that, maybe seven people. And then I started getting more followers. I was like, I don't understand how this is happening. I'm not actively trying. And I only have maybe like a few hundred today, which is by no means considered to be a social media influencer by any means. But
well, you're influencing me.
Yeah, I just think it's fun to kind of mess around with the filters and the brightness of things. And you know, I try to put something on there that's, you know, more exciting than just daily life. If I see something cool, you know, I'll do it. If I'm traveling, you know, I will. You know, but for the most part, I don't think of it as like a photo album. You know, that's what I would use Facebook for, of just like, oh, here's, you know, a number of pictures, you know, from this trip or from this event or something like that.
Right.
And, you know, as far as, you know, I use really each social media platform differently. You know, Twitter, as you know, I have a couple of accounts. One of them I rarely ever use because I was trying to make it as a big shot Twitter comedian, which hasn't happened yet, which I rarely try anymore. And then I started another one just with my name that was just more industry based. And, you know, I started to post more personal related things just to kind of get people to know who I am personally beyond just my thoughts on the industry. Otherwise, I think that would be too boring. And then, you know, Facebook is, you know, I rarely post anything work related on there, but it's, you know, it's mostly just kind of what I don't post on Facebook that much at all anymore. I used to a lot, but not so much. So to answer your question, I use Instagram just for myself, not even as a social media. But I know a lot of other people use it specifically to, you know, gain mass amounts of followers and get attention. And also for the, I guess, you know, the little narcissist in all of us is probably, you know, you could say that about all social media platforms, but
oh sure,
yeah. But for Instagram, I think it's a lot of, hey, look where I am, look what I'm doing.
Okay, well, I mean, you see a lot of that on Facebook too.
Oh yeah, you know, absolutely.
Here's what I'm eating. Here's my feet in the sand, and you know, I mean, we're all guilty of doing that at some point. I just thought it was interesting that, you know, he's got the person that I was starting to follow has, you know, kids that are in their late teens, and he said that he didn't want to, you know, be on Facebook when they're on Facebook and stuff, and you know, but he's on Instagram, so it was just kind of a strange thing. But anyway, so I appreciate
it. Like a little different dimension.
Yeah.
So are you going to start using it more? What can I expect from your Instagram account?
I have no idea. But probably, you know, more pictures of roller coasters and drums. You know, that's probably what I will put on there. But I also noticed that, you know, in addition to the picture, there is some text and then a lot of hashtags. People are like hashtag crazy on Instagram.
Sometimes a little too crazy.
And so do people search by that? What do people do with those hashtags? Or is that just a way to caption the picture?
People might be searching for it, depending on what they're using Instagram for. I want to see a bunch of pictures of avocados. Well, you know, if I just type in avocado, then, you know, I'm going to get everything that's, you know, that's tagged to that.
Uh-huh.
But if there's something that's maybe a little bit more popular, if it was like, you know, we recently had an eclipse, you know, the solar eclipse, you know, something like that. Maybe I will post something using that hashtag, and then I'm going to click on it and just see everything else that was used for that hashtag. So maybe it's something that, you know, that I'm either seeing or that I'm using myself that I can quickly see other people who are posting similar types of things. Now, businesses are probably actively searching things that are related to their business. So I'm sure many of the folks that we're, you know, that we work with as far as parks might be searching for their park name, or they might search, you know, roller coaster, or they might, you know, they might search for, you know, thrills or something that somebody might be hashtagging in a photo that they're posting so that they could engage with them and say, hey, great picture. You know, a lot of them might be saying, hey, do you mind if we use this, you know, as part of our social media promotion? And then that really gets that user engaged and gets them involved. It happened with us, actually, when we were at the FAA conference, Florida Attraction Association conference, a couple of years ago. If you remember, we had phenomenal views of the bay at mm-hmm. Sanibel Harbor.
Yep.
And I posted, you know, an Instagram photo that was like, working weekends isn't so bad, because it was on Saturday or Sunday or so, and I had my laptop out there on the balcony, and the hotel reached out to me and said, hey, we'd love to use this. Is that okay? And I said, yeah, absolutely. And so then I was scrolling through either Facebook or maybe it was Instagram a couple days later, and I saw my picture being posted, and it said, you know, thanks, remote office. We hope you had a great stay, or something like that. So it's you know, the hashtags themselves, you know, if these people are not always necessarily checking in, or if they're not tagging them, then it might be they might be able to find it through a hashtag to find material that they can use.
So for example, a park that might have a new attraction or a new exhibit or something, if somebody has gone in and they've taken a picture of it, they could look for that and say, hey, you know, look at so and so's picture of our new exhibit or our new coaster or a new game or a new food item, and you know, that's a way to kind of help engage the other, you know, other listeners or other viewers, I should say.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. The whole audience.
Yeah. Okay, cool. And nice job in bringing that back around to the industry as well. That was a nice little turnaround on that as well. Since we are this is the Attraction Pros podcast, that's one more reason why you are an Attraction Pro.
Ah, there you go.
Well done.
There you go.
So speaking of attractions, and you asked what would be on my Instagram account, and I mentioned roller coasters, and of course, yes, absolutely, there's going to be roller coasters. And
good, because if it's not fun, I'm not interested.
Exactly, you know, that's what I figured. And in other conversations, we've talked about kind of our favorite roller coasters, and one of mine absolutely is Fury at Carowinds. That is just an absolutely awesome ride, and I'm looking forward to a lot of the new stuff that's coming out next year. Some of those announcements that have been made already. Wondering what you're looking forward to, you know, coming up in the next year as far as things that have already been announced.
I am most looking forward to Steel Vengeance at Cedar Point.
Okay.
That's what it's called, right?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Good. mainly because I've been wanting that for a while. I think when I first rode my first Rocky Mountain coaster, which I think was New Texas Giant at Six Flags Over Texas, I definitely got off of that and said, this needs to happen to Main Streak.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, no offense to the original manufacturer, in 1991, that was, I mean, it was an absolute phenomenal ride. But I think over the years, it just became more and more difficult to maintain, and it became a less pleasant experience. And I think this is the perfect way to just give it the jolt of energy that it needs. Not to mention to just get people straight to the back of the park, which they did 10 years ago by building Maverick, which is, you know, right next door to Main Street,
right.
Steel Vengeance. But it'll be good to really, you know, they've been doing well as far as placement, you know, Gatekeeper in 2012, getting people over to the beach side there, and then Valraven, last year. You know, it's been a few years since I've been there now.
You got to get yourself back.
But, I know. And I live closer now, too. I just moved to Chicago from Florida, so I'm a little bit closer.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, that's closer to the front of the park, and then getting this towards the back is, you know, it'll be a good way to move guests through the park in a good way. And obviously, it just looks like it's going to be an incredible ride.
It does.
That's what I'm most looking forward to in 2018.
And, you know, I share that, and I think I may have shared an email that, you know, I love the new Texas Giant, and I rode it a couple years ago and was just completely blown away, you know, after the transformation. And then
did you ever ride the old Texas Giant?
I never did. I had never ridden that. I rode the original Mean Streak.
Sure.
And that became too rough to ride, in my opinion.
Right.
And in fact, the last maybe two times that I was at Cedar Point, I didn't even ride it. We just walked right by. And that's, you know, that's, for me, a coaster nerd, that's a rare thing to see a massive wooden roller coaster and just walk right by it. So,
right.
But it was, you know, however coasters are designed, that one tended to shake my head more than my body, you know, and I don't know if that, like, Chris Gray talks about the center line, right? And I don't know if that's the way it was built, you know, however many years ago, or the way the turns were designed or whatever it was, or like you said, the way it was maintained. Not that it was maintained poorly, but, you know, that much wood and that much momentum and that much force of energy is going to take its toll.
Sure.
But when I rode the new Texas Giant this past summer, I have to say I was a little disappointed. It wasn't...
Really?
It wasn't as wild and out of control as I remember it. Now, that could be just the way I remembered it. Or, you know, maybe there's a new wheel on there or new bearings or something that has slowed it down a bit. It's not... but it just was not as crazy out of control as I remembered it. So I'm very hopeful, obviously, for Steel Vengeance, because it looks like there's different elements on it than New Texas Giant, but it does look like it's kind of got that reckless abandon that I really enjoy about some of those bigger coasters.
And I think that, you know, maybe the reason why you thought that is because, you know, that was Rocky Mountain's first product, right?
Yeah, I think so.
I think so, yeah. And it looks like it's actually been very exciting over the last, I think, 6 years now to actually see how they've evolved and the new elements that they've been putting on. And,
oh, yeah.
And, you know, even some of their newer projects. So I think we're going to get that wild, out-of-control feeling from from Steel Vengeance. You know, I rode Goliath last summer at Six Flags here in Chicago, Great America.
Oh, yeah.
And it was, I mean, it was incredibly paced, felt out of control, but also felt comfortable, too.
Mm-hmm.
Not like living room couch comfortable, but also, you know, definitely, it, you know, it didn't feel like what Mean Streak has been feeling like the last few years, by any means. So I have high expectations and high confidence for Steel Vengeance.
Yeah. Good. I'm also looking forward to the single rail coasters, just because it's different, you know, and it's single file in the seat arrangement.
Okay.
As a lot of people have been talking about, I'm a little concerned with capacity.
Okay.
But we'll see what happens. But I'm interested to see what that experience is like.
So I'm feeling like an uninformed coaster nerd. Can you enlighten me a little to the single rail? Are these Intamins? Are they?
No, they're Rocky Mountain.
Oh, this is Rocky Mountain's new, like, single rail track.
I think they call it the Raptor track.
Okay.
Wonder Woman and at Fiesta Texas and Railblazer at California's Great America.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
They just look interesting. So
yeah,
I'm excited for those as well.
All right. Yes, I do remember seeing those. So,
yeah.
Thanks for refreshing my memory.
You're welcome. Absolutely.
2018 is going to be an exciting year.
I think so.
It's going to prompt a lot of road trips, I'm sure.
I've already got one planned. How about you?
Not yet, but I don't know. What's on your list?
This year, let's see. The early talk is to start in the Virginia area, do like Busch Gardens and
King's
Dominion, then go up into Pennsylvania. I think Hershey Park, Knoebels, Kennywood. We're trying to, I think, to also get up to Waldemere because none of us have been there before.
Cool.
And then end off at Cedar Point.
Nice.
So that's kind of the, you know, and of course, as we're originally talking about it, we're like, well, you know, we could add in Carowinds and Dollywood, you know, but that really extends the trip quite a bit. And so we try to keep it to about a week when we do the trip. And one of our buddies that goes with us, his family lives in West Virginia. So we're gonna try and make a sweep over into West Virginia to see his folks and then get back on the trail and hit some more parks.
You know, it's funny that you mention, you know, you see other parks that are just like a little bit off the route that you're taking. That happened to me on a road trip a few years ago. I think actually it was the year New Texas Giant opened, and our goal was to drive from Orlando to Texas. And it was like, well, what can we do on the way there? And we kept saying, well, this is just a little, you know, a couple hours away. This one's just a couple hours away. We ended up doing 11 parks in 8 days.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, we ended up leaving Orlando like after work on a Thursday, and we got to Atlanta, so we went to Six Flags over Georgia, and then we went to Lake Winnipesaukee up near Chattanooga, and then we kept driving up to Indiana, and we went to Holiday World, and then Six Flags St. Louis, and then Worlds of Fun, and then Silver Dollar City, and then finally Six Flags over Texas, which, by the way, is an 8-hour drive between Branson and Dallas, if anyone's wondering.
Yes, it is.
Which, you know, you did that this year, didn't you?
Yes, I've done it twice, going both ways.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And then we went to San Antonio. We did SeaWorld. Then we did Fiesta. Then we did Schlitterbahn. And then we ended at Kima and drove home.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, we stopped in New Orleans. We stopped in Pensacola. We stayed at Jimmy Buffett's Margaritaville Hotel. There had to. I just had to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, for some of those that were a little closer, did you do multiple parks in a single day?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
We did Six Flags over Georgia and Lake Winnipesaukee in the same day. And then there were some of them where we were able to split it. So, like, we all got Six Flags season passes because that made the most sense. We had four parks on the trip.
Mm-hmm.
So when we left Holiday World, we got to St. Louis in time to get a few night rides in St. Louis at Six Flags. And then we went back in the morning, and we did it in the morning. We finished up, and then we drove to Kansas City, and we did Worlds of Fun there. And then did we leave? Yeah, so then in the morning, we ended up actually getting like a whole day ahead of ourselves because it was like, well, if we drive now, we can get the last couple hours at this park.
Nice.
And that ended up being really efficient. A little rushed, but efficient. So yeah, we were able to get to Silver Dollar City in time. That I think at that time it was like, oh, if you're here after 3, you get a full day's admission for the next day or something like that. So we were able to do that, split that. And then, in San Antonio, I think we did 3 parks on the same day. I think we did Dallas, SeaWorld, and Fiesta. And then we did Schlitterbahn in the morning and afternoon, and then got to Kima at night. So we got a night ride on Boardwalk Bullet and finished up right there.
And that's a good coaster.
Oh, it was phenomenal.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that was good.
I remember I was down in Houston doing some work with Splashtown, and I was there for a number of days, and all of my engagements were at night after the park closed for the night. So I kind of had my daytime free. You know, one day I did go to the water park and check things out, but I had ended up having an extra day, so I drove down to Kima, and I was really impressed with that coaster.
Yeah,
really.
Was it Martin and Lennox?
I don't even know.
Yeah, I think it is, and I think they've got a few others over in China.
Okay. Okay.
So there you go. Road trip to China.
There you go. That'd be more than a road trip. than a road trip. Well, it's funny you mentioned, you know, well, this one's just a little off the path. We can go to it. I think that's a very similar mindset that we have when we go on our trips. So it must just be the lure of another coaster, another park, something. Because the first time it happened to us was a number of years ago. And we were driving, I want to say, from... I think it was between Dollywood and Holiday World, maybe. Yeah, I think it was. And part of the trip, you're going, and there's a road that if you go one way, you head over to Indiana. You go the other way, you're heading to Cincinnati. Well, what's in Cincinnati? But
King's Island.
So that wasn't even part of our trip at that point. You know, we weren't even planning to go. And we're like, well, and we went through all those calculations in our head. Well, you know, they have an after 5 admission. If we drive there now, you know, if we go there now, we'll be there by like 7. You know, get a couple of rides on the Beast, night rides at that, and then, you know, stay there till closing, and then drive however long it's going to be to Holiday World. And so we did, and that was an awesome trip, number one. But that has also led us to do a lot of those things on subsequent trips. Like, well, if we can squeeze in King's Island.
What's the ROI on this detour?
Very high. I'm sure it's very high.
What's the coaster to cost ratio? Right.
Yeah, yeah. And that you don't even figure out till later, right? You're just
That's true.
Hey,
yeah.
We're this close. We can't not go and be this close.
Sure.
That's the conversation that kind of happened in the car. That, in fact, it happens a lot. You know, as we're driving around. So
that's funny.
Yeah. Yeah. Are there any parks that you have not been to that are sort of on your park bucket list?
Sure. I have not done really anything in eastern Pennsylvania or New Jersey.
Really? Okay.
I have never been to Knoebels. I have never been to Hershey. I have never been to Dorney. I've never been to Great Adventure.
Oh, my goodness.
I know. And all of that needs to change.
Immediately. Well, maybe not right now.
All right, see you later.
See ya. Gotta go. Wow, yeah, those are some great parks.
Yeah.
Some really great parks.
Not for lack of desire, don't worry. But,
sure.
But just lack of opportunity to get to those areas.
Absolutely.
Yeah, haven't been to Six Flags New England, haven't been to Coney Island.
Wow. Well, I think you just planned a road trip for yourself for next summer.
There you go.
that's all easy. I mean, that's all East Coast. Those are pretty all close to each other.
Right. Yeah, that's a quick trip, fly in and out of Philly.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then when you're in Philly, you can go to the Eastern State Penitentiary.
That's right. I would actually love to go there during Halloween time. Don't they do a spooky thing there?
They do. It's called Terror Behind the Walls.
Okay.
Yeah, and I got to walk through it with my friend Amy that works there, but it was not during Halloween time. So they have some of the sets and Maze is still set up, you know, because it's such a production to put them up and take them down and everything. Some of it stays up all year. So she walked me through some of that, and it was amazing. Even in the daytime, you know, with no music and no fog and no characters, I mean, there was parts that I was really creeped out at.
You know, the problem, you know, it's always nice walking through kind of a haunted or any walkthrough attraction, either during the daytime or out of operation or with the lights on, because it kind of gives you a new sense of appreciation for just how much it goes into that.
Oh, yeah.
And just the amazing attention to detail that you may or may not see when, you know, when it's in operation. So, no, I think that's always great. Anytime you get an opportunity to go through a house without, you know, without the characters in it, mm-hmm. with the lights on, it gives you a new sense of appreciation for all that those creative teams goes into that I could never do.
yeah. All those things you say, wow, that was such a great idea. I'm glad somebody thought of that. I knew I would.
Yes.
I know I would.
So to those of you thinking of those and doing those, thank you.
Keep doing it.
Yes.
No, but I think you're absolutely right, because I remember when I was at Universal and I would walk through the houses for Halloween Horror Nights, and the level of detail that people put into an area of a room that people are probably going to be scared away from,
right?
You know, it truly is incredible. You know, that much detail goes into it. So, you know, hats off to, like you said, the people that do that. Some people are noticing. Some people, I think, are walking through the houses completely with their eyes closed, and they'll never see any of it. But,
right.
But their story is not lost on everyone.
Right, and I think that there's, you know, different things that jump out to different people. Like, you know, using Horror Nights as an example, you
jump
know,
out.
Go through.
Anyway.
I'll go through with different people, and you know, even actually, I used to do RIP tours at Universal, the Horror Night equivalent of VIP tours, and going through the same house night after night with a different group, it was actually kind of cool to see what was apparent or jumped out at different guests of them just noticing different detail.
Sure.
So it's, you know, not everybody's gonna see everything, but most people are going to see something, and everybody's going to see something different. That's what makes it really unique.
Absolutely. And yeah. I think that's similar to just the park experience in general, because some people are going to walk through an area and see one thing. Some people are going to see another thing. Some people are going to be talking to somebody else and not see anything.
Right.
You know, and
totally.
What they see or what they appreciate or what, you know, brings them into the story or the atmosphere could be very different for different people.
Absolutely.
Have you seen the new Fun World magazine?
No.
It's out. Let's see.
Told you I'm being a bad coaster.
It's the September issue, and there's a number of tributes in there to Marty Sklar, which is not surprising.
Right.
One of them was, and I can't remember the author now. I'd have to look it up, but they were talking about, you know, what his impressions were of Shanghai Disney and what's his biggest takeaway or what is he most impressed with. And he said the pavement.
Because
of the detail and even the story that's told within the different elevations and the different materials used and all those different things, that's what he noticed and appreciated. And of course, people are going to appreciate the attractions and the cast members and that type of thing. But, you know, from sort of the designer perspective, you get a whole different viewpoint of that. And I used to work with a gentleman when I was at Canobie Lake Park. His name was Tom Morrow. And he used to come back from trips to different places. And, you know, he would mostly have pictures of trash cans and condiment dispensers. You know,
okay.
So you want a new, you know, better looking trash can, or, you know, a better way to dispense ketchup and mayonnaise and mustard. You know, those were the kind of pictures that he brought back. It was really, really entertaining.
So the lesson there really is there are so many tiny little building blocks of the guest experience, and some are bigger than others and some are more noticeable than others, but they all are equally as important.
I would say, yeah.
Creating the phenomenal, seamless guest experience, whether it's pavement or condiment dispensers or the elevation changes or details in the haunted house.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And they like we've been saying, they could be different for different people, and not everybody's going to get the same experience. So,
right.
Yeah, it's all got to work together. So.
Yeah.
Awesome. So if we wanted to find out more about Amusement Advantage and Josh, how would we do that?
Sure. So I guess you could go to www.amusementadvantage.com. Follow us on Facebook. On Twitter, I believe it's amuse_advantage. Let me double check that. I should know this off the top of my head, shouldn't I? There is no underscore. It is Amuse Advantage. On Twitter, I am Joshua_Liebman. That's L-I-E, B as in boy, M-A-N. Twitter. Instagram, I'm remote_office, but there's not going to be too much industry related on there. So it's mostly just going to be pictures of my laptop. So if you're interested in what my laptop looks like, it's a regular MacBook Pro, nothing too special about it. And that's about it. What about Performance Optimist Consulting? And
well, yeah, you pretty much said it right there, performanceoptimist.com. And from there, you can...
So consulting is not in the URL.
It's not, correct. It's www.performanceoptimist.com. And from there, if you scroll down to the bottom, you can see all my links to the social stuff. So there's Facebook. I don't have the Instagram one there, but there's Twitter and there's LinkedIn.
Well, we're going to be expecting that pretty soon.
Right? Yeah, I was going to say, if you find me on Instagram, I think it's Matt, P-O-C. It might be an underscore in there as well. But right now you won't see much there, but there's a lot more things over on Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn as well. And when you go to performanceoptimist.com, you'll also see things that are my... products and things that I offer. But there's also a link to my blog, which is leadertips.wordpress.com. And that's where I write my articles and share different experiences. And they're usually focused around leadership or teamwork or customer service or something in that nature. And just like Josh has been very good at doing on this episode, bringing things back around, telling us what the lesson is, I try to do that as well. So if I'm out someplace and I see either great customer service or bad customer service, I try to relate that back to some sort of lesson that people can use to either improve their own leadership capacity or their business or their employee performance or whatever it happens to be. So performanceoptimist.com is the place to start looking for all that stuff.
Cool. Yeah. And by the way, I have to correct your Instagram name. It is Matt H. P-O-C.
Thank you for doing it. That's how familiar I am with it.
And so, you just got a new follower. You're up to 194.
Is that remote office?
Yeah, I guess I wasn't following you before. But there was awesome. Nothing to look at.
No, right? And there probably won't be for a while. Now I'm going to have to go put a picture in now. Great. Yeah. Well, hey, can I take a picture of my laptop? Here, let's do this. I'm going to take a picture of my laptop as we are talking, and then I'm going to post that. Can I do this live? How do I do this?
What about that? Do you see me?
Yes, hold on. Let me take another picture. Perfect. Got it. Okay. Now.
Good. I'm glad I dressed up for this.
Live on air. I'm going to. How do I do? I don't even do this. Okay.
Also, you can link it to Facebook and Twitter. So make sure to connect your Facebook and Twitter accounts to it so you can link one back to the other. But you know what? I actually don't like linking it to Twitter because when you tweet an Instagram picture, it sends the link and it kind of, and you know, in today's day and age of instant gratification, it takes like 3 extra seconds for you to see the picture.
Right.
Versus by posting it on Instagram, you now have the image file of your Instagram. And then you can just tweet it like tweeting a regular photo. That's what I always do.
Okay. So I think I've tagged you on it. I'm going to hit done. Yep. And then I'm going to do hashtag Attraction Pros.
Cool.
All right. I'm going to say, I didn't spell it right.
I guess that means we have to start an Attraction Pros Instagram too.
We should. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, here's what I've just learned since I've this is like, I think, one of my first posts. There's a number of steps you have to go through for it. So you've got to, you know, pick the picture and then tag people and all these different things. So, okay. And then there's also a little spot where I can do it right to my Facebook account. Oh, it's going to link it. I don't want to do that. Okay. I'll do that later. And then I'm going to hit share. All right. Let's see what happens. Posting. All righty.
I see it. Oh, I see me.
Fantastic.
Oh, and I'm tagged in it. All right.
Yeah. Wow. All right. I've learned something. This has been awesome. The ROI on this podcast for me has been through the roof.
Good. And I'm going to wear a suit for each next podcast, just in case.
Just in case. I know that green shirt looks pretty nice. So
about to go to the gym.
All right. Well, you get to the gym. We'll sign off and invite everybody to keep listening to the Attraction Pros podcast. We've got some great guests coming up, and we're super excited about all the different things we're going to get to talk about. If there's anything that you would like us to talk about as Attraction Pros, please give us some feedback and let us know.
Thank you all for listening.
Thank you for joining us on the Attraction Pros podcast. For more information on Josh Liebman, please visit AmusementAdvantage.com. For more information on Matt Heller, please visit PerformanceOptimist.com.